Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome in the Castle Lane Spare Time Bowling Show here on 105.7 FM. The Fan in studio this week. Everybody is back. He is Phil Brilo, fresh back from Japan.
No. Castle Lane's last.
Oh, Castle Lane.
New Year's Eve,
when were you in Japan? Weren't you in Japan?
No, Japan's coming up end of the month. I'll be there.
Okay.
We'll actually be wrapping up that tournament in Japan when you guys start your show Sunday morning here.
Next week?
No, 27th.
27th.
So 3 weeks from today.
Gotcha. Okay. So that is Phil Brilo. Also with us is Dwight Albrecht. Again, in the Spare Time Pro Shop in New Berlin. You were promoting the big New Year's Day deal that you guys had going on. How did that go?
Well, I guess it was a very big, good success. Unfortunately, I was in the hospital most of the day because my mom had a mini stroke.
Correct.
So,
how's she doing?
Good.
Good.
Good. Yeah, she's back. We had her back to the nursing home later that afternoon. They call it a TIA or a mini stroke, but she's doing good. I saw her yesterday, and family doctor says the older you get, the more you're going to have of those. So
you're looking forward to getting older?
No, I'm not looking forward to getting older.
No.
But I guess it was a great success and a great tournament, and a lot of people turned out for it. So
sweet. How was Castle Lanes for you then last weekend?
Good. Midwinter High School Classic in ninth year that we've had that down there with Phil and Patty Anko, and full field on the boys' side, only a couple teams short on the girls' side. Great high school bowling action. A different format than these kids see the rest of the year, with match play and qualifying and brackets. And
so no Baker?
Oh, it's all Baker. All Baker. Yeah, but best of three matches, you lose, you're out. You keep moving through the bracket as the tournament goes on.
So how long did that take then?
We started at 10 a.m. We got done right about 5 with the TV tapings.
Oh, man, that's a long day.
Oh, yeah.
That's a lot of editing.
Kids that made the TV earned it, no doubt about that. So, I mean, when you start with 22 teams and work your way down the final four, it takes a while. But it was a lot of fun, a lot of good matches. We had teams from all over the state. We had teams from Green Bay that came down. We had a team from Oostburg, Monona Grove. So we had some teams from all over the state come down and try their luck down here. But, you know, once again, you get these teams in southeastern Wisconsin, and it's so strong with some of these, you know, legacy teams. Now, Indian Trail made the show on the boys and girls side. Indian Trail, one of the strongest girls teams in the state.
They're out of Kenosha.
And then Kenosha Tremper made it on the boys side as well. So, and Racine Park on the girls side. So, lots of good. When that show airs in a couple of weeks on TV, it's going to be a lot of quality bowling action you don't want to miss on Spectrum Sports.
No doubt
about it.
No, so Phil is a busy bug as always. All right. So, that show last week, you know this. Have we ever had multiple ties on a TV show in the PBA?
I believe that was a first.
You ever remember it?
I don't ever remember two in one show, no. But I thought, you know, you're going to look at me and say that I'm nuts again. But I thought it was one of the greatest shows of the year.
So, I had a moment. Okay. I'll tell you what my moment was, and you will laugh. And we'll go over it more in detail. But the first one between Troop and Sanders, right? So, he leaves. What did he leave? 10-pin or whatever it was. 10-pin, yeah. 10-pin on that second ball in the 10th or whatever. So it said E for even. And I'm watching it back. I wasn't watching it live. I'm like, okay, so he picks this up. It's over. So he picks it up. I fast forward. And I'm like, wait a second. How's Troop bowling? Sanders picked it up. What the heck happened? Like, was there some type of controversy? So then I'm like, I better rewind it again. So I rewind it again. I watch it again. And I was like, oh. It was even if he picked it up. That's what the even meant, dummy. And you know better than that, stupid. So anyways, all right, let's talk about that. Troop and Sanders in that first match. Dude, what about his hair, man? Do you wish you had his hair, Dwight?
Well, I don't think that's his hair every day, correct, Phil? You're around him all the time.
It's pretty much, yeah. Last year in Indianapolis, or a couple of years ago in Indianapolis, he actually switched to cornrows for a week, and that didn't last long. He didn't bowl well there. But that's his hair pretty much every day.
Yeah.
So sometimes he doesn't pick it out to the full fro, but.
Well, I think Sparky's too young to know his dad when his dad was in his prime.
I remember watching his dad. Maybe not in his prime, maybe at the end of his career, but.
Yeah, he was pretty colorful guy also.
Right. Doesn't look so colorful anymore. He looks old.
That's what happens when you get old. I was colorful in my early years too, Sparky.
Dude, he looks like a tough dude though, man.
Guppy?
Maybe from what I could see on TV.
Guppy was a riot.
Oh, yeah.
I had him as a pro for the Pro-Am.
Really?
Mm-hmm. 93, the last year they came to town under the Miller High Life Classic at Celebrity, and Guppy was my pro.
How did that go?
He's a riot. He was just nuts. So that quickly, that lane condition that they put out, USBC governed for that condition, I throw my first ball and try to play second arrow, and the ball falls right off into the right gutter. And I turn around, and Guppy's standing right behind me, cracking up laughing. I'm like, how embarrassing. You know? And he looks at me and goes, my ball did the same thing the first time I threw it.
And
so that's how we kind of broke the ice, you know, the whole type of deal, because they were so flooded, so heavily oiled, even on the outside.
Right.
So he, of course, didn't have the turn on the ball that you needed to make the ball hook back. And then that was pre-resin.
Right.
So, but no, he's in his day was a very colorful, flashy guy. So obviously
his son is the same.
Yes.
All right. So. You get Troop and Sanders. Before we get into this, because we really haven't talked about this at all, what kind of following does he have when you were out in Reno?
Kyle?
Yeah.
He's pretty popular with the younger crowd.
Is he?
Yeah, no doubt about it. He's got the personality. He's great talking to people. He's really developed a persona pretty well. I think his doubles pairing with Jesper and winning the Rotholman doubles back in April in Portland, I think that kind of let more people worldwide see him, you know, with the international, the number of people internationally that know Jesper with the big splash he's made on scene the last couple of years too. Kyle knows how to work it. He's got his team Fish, where it's him and a lot of the younger guys, and they promote themselves on their website and they sell merchandise with the team Fish logos on it and stuff like that.
Yeah,
he's got it going. He's a smart kid.
Okay, but from my perspective,
okay,
I mean, I've been on a World Series bowling ton. When I was in Vegas, I haven't been to Reno yet, but there really weren't a ton of huge followers per se back then. Belmo had his, right? Rash had some. Then once we get past that, there wasn't really huge followings for individual bowlers per se. That's why I was wondering if these young guys now are starting to get, you know, that following of people that are, you clearly can see they are there for them. Yeah. I mean, if he's got his own line of clothes and what they're promoting, then obviously you can tell who's there for him and his guys versus not.
And I know Storm's bringing him in for the Wisconsin High School State Tournament in Wausau in March. They are bringing Kyle Troop to the High School State Tournament.
Beautiful.
There's a lot of kids that are looking forward to seeing him there, too.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Wouldn't
that
you love
is
to see
brilliant.
A group of young kids in the crowd with big fros on their head? Just a wig? Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Sure, oh, like Troop,
for his fans.
Like Troop wigs or something
like
that?
Yeah, exactly.
Why isn't he coming up with that? That seems easy money. Doesn't that seem easy?
It would seem like easy.
Like, just
money.
Take his hair, put it into a wig, and sell it? Oh, yeah.
Throw that a mask seems, over the front of it? Absolutely.
That seems.
Have a pick just hanging out from it?
Seems brilliant for Troop, no question about it. So he's coming to state tournament.
Yeah.
That's a great get right there.
Yeah, and then Rhino Page for the Shawnee Memorial March. Rhino Page is coming to Sheboygan for that one. So
that's good, too.
A couple of good young pros that are coming that these kids will get a chance to interact with in March.
Good. Wow, that's awesome. All right. So, Troop, look, there's some things that you like. All right. So, you like his hair, right? And among my notes that I got here, the other thing I have was him dancing as they were going into break, kind of.
Right.
That's good, too. I mean, that's all personality. It's all stuff that you want to see. And people might think I'm overdoing it. But, Dwight, seriously, I mean, that's good for the PBA. You want him. Now you need him to win, but you want him to be like that.
Young guys and your kids love it. The old guys probably are like, yeah. Again, the traditionalist, probably like over the top, but no, for young demographic, absolutely.
Well, how was it over the top? They were just playing music going into break. That's all it was. He wasn't dancing just to dance.
Kyle being Kyle.
Yeah,
right.
Just being nice and loose. I mean,
right.
There's no use sitting there and building up the nerves between break.
Right.
Loosen up.
Right. Yeah.
Toughest shots always come out of the commercial break for these guys, and we actually saw that with Kyle, too.
I absolutely loved it. Now, he throws the first six, and then he comes high. In the seventh frame and leaves that 10-pin. And that leaves open the door for Sanders, obviously, to get back into it, who wasn't bowling bad either.
Never heard of him up to this point.
Neither
but obviously, you see him every week. And obviously, they said he also was up for Rookie of the Year.
Well, yeah, he didn't bowl that many events this year. I think he only had five under his belt before he bowled World Series. He won in Memphis with the Billy Hardwick Memorial plastic ball only tournament that we had on Extra Frame. And he throws it well. And he needed a big last game to just make the TV show.
Yeah.
He shot 267. Bill O'Neill shot a buck 80. And they switched spots in the standings. And that's where Sanders got together. And Sanders pretty much had to thank Simonelli and Svensson for making the show, because Simonelli and Svensson had started on the pair.
Yeah.
Where Sanders finished for that last game in qualifying for a world championship.
I love the bit where they go and they show the batch play, and people aren't aware, but Phil, you see it every week, how it can come down to making that top five TV. It can come down to the 10th frame, the last ball.
There were three guys going for the last spot. I mean, four guys, actually, if you count Rash in eighth. I mean, Rash was out pretty early. He struggled early in that 60th game. But, you know, Frankie LaWatt had a chance, Bill O'Neill had a chance, and it ended up being Sanders. And, you know, Sanders took advantage of what was in front of him that last game after Simonelli and Jesper bowled they get all that practice. They bowl game one on that pair. Not a lot of other lefties. And then next thing you know, Sanders hits that pair the last game, 260, and he makes the show.
Yeah. I just like how they show it, because it shows you the true grind. I mean, they show more emotion making the TV show than they do when they're on TV.
That's why people should be, you know, subscribe watching to Extra Frame. But that's just my own opinion.
That's absolutely right. How's Extra Frame subscriptions going?
Good. Lots of viewers live while we were on from the World Series of Bowling. There's been a lot of people catching the archives, too. That's one thing that we always have with Extra Frame. What we're talking about now, you can go back, if you're a subscriber, watch that last round of World Championship qualifying. You can watch all five of those last games and watch that last game go back and forth. And it was a heck of a time. Marshall Holman on the call for it, too. So, you know, you get the insight of a Hall of Famer. Yeah, it's really good. So, yeah, if you haven't subscribed to Extra Frame yet, I don't know what anybody's waiting for if you're a bowling fan, because you can watch it anytime you want. You don't have to watch it live. ESPN shows, if you miss any of them, they're on there. CBS Sports Network shows, they're on there for the last few years. So
that's beautiful. So make sure to sign up for that. Then, like I said, I got confused by what all happened there in the 10th frame. But they end up having to have the roll-off, and the roll-off is just best ball. That's pretty much what it comes down to. Troop throws a strike. Sanders throws a 7-split. Game over. Troop advances. We've talked about this in the past, but might as well talk about it again, because this isn't the only tie of the TV show. Do you like the format of essentially best ball? Now, they would have both thrown strikes. It would have continued on until there would have been a difference. What do you like?
I think it's fine. I believe that's how it always used to be. I don't think they've
ninth and tenth for quite a few years.
Yeah, it was
a ninth and tenth.
Yeah,
okay. Two frames.
I'm fine with it. I still like the one-on-one matches, like what they had versus what they did the previous four shows.
No. Stay focused. We're just talking about the roll-off. Nobody's talking about the rest of it. Just the roll-off. Sorry. You like the roll-off.
I'm okay with it, yes.
You had to find take away to take a shot at me. That's all it was.
That's right.
I see it opening.
I have a shot. I'm
going
to take it.
I'm going to comment Sparky on it. What the heck? Okay, Phil, what about you?
Yeah, it's perfect. It's great for TV. It builds the excitement. And, hey, if you couldn't get done the first 10 frames, that's your own fault. Get it done in one shot.
Right. You had the opportunity to win it at that point, Troop especially. Yeah. It couldn't finish it. So Troop advances, even though they both tied at 248. Troop advances on the roll-off with the strike. And on to match number two we go. Before we get to match number two, you knew about this obviously the whole time, and we've seen it before, but we haven't talked about it. Cheerleaders? You like the Nevada cheerleaders?
Well, initially, it went right over my head when I was watching the show, but it was actually my wife that said, really, cheerleaders? You're going to need cheerleaders? And I'm just like, I'm all right. I kept thinking during the show, what is that crazy fan sound I'm hearing through the speakers? And I realized it was their little pom-pom set they were shaking. I thought, oh, okay, that's what it is. Because I kept hearing, well, it's got to be distracting to the bowlers. You hear this fan sound going off constantly.
But it wasn't. It was
the cheerleaders' pom-poms. Yeah. Shaking back and forth behind him.
Right.
So I don't know. I was okay with
it. How was it received there in Reno?
I wasn't out there when they taped that show. I was watching it on ESPN3 with a couple of people while they were taping it, and I've seen it before. It's eye candy. I've had a couple of women go, what?
Cheerleaders? Oh, yeah. They're not going to like it.
Yeah.
This is my thing on it. I don't need it. They need to be there.
Yeah.
But if I can incorporate in a college into it, and if that helps draw me some college kids out there, because you would assume these cheerleaders are telling everybody versus via social media, whatever else, where they're at cheerleading. Hey, we're doing this PBA event thing. They're taping this week. Come on out and see us. And we're going to be on TV. Da, da, da. Maybe you drew some extra people to the TV taping by them promoting that they're going to be there. Now, again, I understand that that's probably not the main emphasis of it, But when you're out there in Reno, you got to figure out the best way to draw people as possible, and why not have a local tie-in, which I guess is what they decided to do in that situation. I'd love to know if, and we obviously can ask Tom Clark whenever, but if they went to them with the idea or mm-hmm. if they came to the PBA with the idea.
It's not the first time that they've had cheerleaders at a PBA event. No, a couple of years ago at one of the Indianapolis events, they had Indianapolis right. Colts cheerleaders there correct. As well. Mm-hmm. So I would have to say lean towards, I don't know for sure, but I'd lean towards it was a PBA.
PBA idea. Reach out, yeah. And then Nevada. And again, if you're in the Nevada cheerleaders, I'm thinking you're down for it. Sure. We're going to be on TV? All right, sure, yeah. We'll do it. We don't know anything about bowling, but we'll come do it.
Yeah. Wasn't it? I think late 90s, early 2000s when Mark Rubich was in charge, didn't he used to have like three really good-looking girls in T-shirts just on the sidelines? And, of course, the camera loved the three of them.
I don't honestly remember that.
I got recall on that.
I'm pretty sure that happened.
All I remember is the days of the constant clapping that I couldn't stand.
Yeah, the constant clapping, the gold pins. Yeah. You know, it's just another
distraction. Well, it's any way to draw people to the TV and keep people when they're on the TV, whatever else. Now, I don't think you're keeping people with cheerleaders necessarily. But again, if it's a local tie-in and you have the local university promoting that they're cheerleaders you made this event, maybe you draw some college kids. Look, just because you're in college, you don't bowl on the college bowling team doesn't mean that you don't watch PBA and don't bowl and didn't bowl in high school or something like that.
I wish they just could have showed a little bit more of the crowd above that, the fans that turned out, and maybe have some of those guys. Wouldn't that have been great if, again, if you had maybe two rows or three rows of fans that had the Guppy Troop froze on or more signage, it's, obviously, for Swenson or Belmo.
It's tough with the bowling stadium because where they had the LED screens and everything like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just a big wall, and then all the bleachers go up from behind them.
Right.
They're shooting down from the bleachers.
Were those,
to get those
filled for all these TV shows when you were out there?
Don't know.
Were out there.
Well, no, they weren't filled when we were out there for qualifying. There was towards the end. There were a good 150 people
really?
There.
That's good.
Sure, just watching the match play
for that,
because it just seems the dignitaries are the ones that are on lane side, the sponsors.
Correct.
And
yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. But honestly, at the
they're the ones
stadium,
that pay the money. I'm assuming.
Yeah, at the stadium,
they should be.
I'd rather be up top looking down mm-hmm. than on the side. No, it's just a better angle. You get to see what's going on. You get to see the ball motion and all that stuff, geeking out on it. So
right, because a lot of the dignitaries on the side were clapping when the pro left the 7-pin or 10-pin because they couldn't see that angle. They couldn't see if the, you know, they got
was
the strike
or not.
Yep.
Right. Yep. I get that. All right. Take a quick time out. We'll come back. We'll go over the rest. The world championship, but match two feature Troop and Simonelli, Ryan Simonelli in Brunswick. We'll see how that one played out. Coming up next, Castle Lane Spare Time Bowling Show here on The Fan. Gasoline's Spare Time Bowling Show here on The Fan. Steve Sparky Fiverr, Phil Brilo from Extra Frame, PBA.com. If you're on a subscription, go get one. Get all the qualifying and watch it live as it's happening. It's awesome. You'll love it. Plus, they have their own Extra Frame tournament schedule as well, right? I mean, shows that aren't tournaments that aren't on TV throughout the course of the year that are on Extra Frame.
Yeah, right now it looks like we're going to have seven of those coming up in 2018. So we'll have some good locations like Portland, Maine is going to be some of the stuff off TV.
Okay.
Extra Frame only with the main event. Best of three bracket matches, 64 guys in a bracket battling it down. It's our version of March Madness.
Nice.
So it's a lot of fun. I'm glad that event's back on the schedule. Wilmington, North Carolina. There's a great tournament in Lubbock, Texas. Another one, Jonesboro, Arkansas. A couple more, and we wrap the season in Coldwater, Ohio. Town of 4,000 people. And I think most of them are in the bowling center while we're there.
Really?
It's insane. 16-lane bowling center. One of the toughest bowling centers. I think these, if you ask the pros, they bowl in all year long because it's so different from lane to lane. And if you come out on top in that Coldwater event, you've definitely earned it.
16 lanes.
16 lanes. And they come out with a ton of people, a ton of sponsorship.
I thought there was a rule that you had to have so many lanes in a bowling center in order to have a PBA event.
It used to be that way, but when we were first at Bayside Bowl, it was only a 12-lane center. Now they have the 8-lane edition where they tape all the ESPN shows. But this event in Coldwater, Ohio, has gone along for quite a long time. It used to be a central region event, and now with the elevation of the Extra Frame Tour, and hopefully Storm will be back with the Storm Cup, Extra Frame Tour, you can have a national title event in a 16-lane center. And it paid $15,000 for first place last year. It's not bad for a weekend's worth of work.
Yeah, Tom told me like 48 lanes was necessary for a PBA event. Obviously, that you just said that's changed. So what do they do, have several shifts?
Yeah, they can have several
in the middle of the night, or how do they do it?
No, they have several shifts. They have three shifts when they're in Coldwater. Start bowling at about 8 in the morning on Saturday. By the time we get wrapped up, it's about midnight to 12:30.
Oh, look at you.
Right back at there, 8 in the morning
you
for match play on
Sunday. There?
Basically, sometimes, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's one
Long
thing for
days.
The bowlers to bowl three shifts. It's a whole nother for Phil, who has to be out the air most of the time to sit there and do that thing all day.
Oh, yeah. 8 a.m. The U.S. Prime example, U.S. Open. We had three squads of qualifying because they only used 24 lanes there. Four qualifying out of a 40-lane center. They kind of made practice pairs this year, changed the format a little bit. That started at 8 a.m., and by the time we wrapped up every night, it was about 11 p.m.
That is a long day.
It makes for some long days, but it's if you're a bowling nut, it's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
You get to see a lot of different stuff, and especially when we were at the U.S. Open, everybody complaining about the lofting on the burn squad, guys lofting at 25, 30 feet on a lane, but I think that's fun to watch because that's a level of athleticism that we can't do that they can. You know, that's why I go to Miller Park and watch guys hit home runs. I can't hit a home run, but it's fun watching these guys park one when they get a hold of one.
Absolutely.
And it's the same thing with extra frame. We're watching these guys loft the ball 25, 30 feet. I can't do that. It's fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. So. You know, the one thing, and it's not going to happen, but the one thing I'd love to see, and I think would really boost extra frame to another level possibly, if you mic'd up guys on the extra frame pair, per se, if you mic them up so you could hear them talking and qualifying, because again, you're on the internet, you're not on TV. So if they F-bomb or they do whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it is what it is. So, I mean, you would really get to hear some of the personalities on those lanes during extra frame.
Well, one of the nice things that we had, once again, going back to the World Series of Bowling and our coverage there, was during the match play rounds, I was able to sideline report. So I'm down there talking to guys between games.
That's great.
You know, talking to Belmo, hey, what you going to do? Talking to Jesper, what's going on? Now you advanced. Now you got to go to this round of eighth match against so-and-so. What's going to be your strategy there?
Who's your Greg Popovich of the tour? The guy that just hates doing the sideline stuff, gives you like two-word answer and walks away. He's just a complete jerk.
I really didn't have a lot of that down there.
No
there was
pops,
a couple of times.
Huh?
No. There was a couple of guys. Wes wanted to wait till after it was done just because there was a match going on next to him, and he didn't want to say anything that might disturb the guys in the match. But then when that match was done, Wes went, he's usually a pretty quiet guy. He went for 5 minutes.
That's awesome.
It was great. So it's just, you know, I haven't had the Greg Popovich moment
when you're
yet.
On for 24 hours, you can use 5 minutes.
No doubt. But yeah, I haven't had the Greg Popovich yet. I've had some guys go, hey, can you wait till after this is done? That's
right.
This type of thing. But some of the guys that you think are normally quiet and reserved, like Wes or Jesper, they give you a minute if they have the time and they feel like it.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I sure do.
Yeah, he's such a jerk. But you know what the funniest thing is? He's a super nice guy. Like, and he just hates that aspect of the game, I guess, so he tends to be a jerk. But, like, if you talk to him, like, away from media and there's no mics on or nothing else, that dude's super cool.
Yeah.
Super nice guy.
One that comes to my mind would be, like, Tom Dowdery.
Oh, Tom's...
Total talking
guy.
Okay.
He likes to claim that ratings go up on extra frame when he's on the extra frame pairs.
Hmm.
So he likes to call. You know,
just comes across as a, you know,
the rebel,
reserved.
The ladies man. You know, the ladies are on. The ladies all start
definitely
watching.
Definitely not quiet, Dwight.
No.
No, that was the one guy that went off about not being selected in PBA league play
the first year.
Oh, was he mad? Furious. Yeah. So, yeah, he's not quiet. No, he'll talk about anything.
He's
you
got
want
an
to talk
eternal
about.
Flame. Let's just say that.
But that's the drive that you want, you know. And he's got that pro shop. Didn't he name the pro shop 99 or something like that, or whatever?
Yeah, something like that. From his 99
TV,
game,
100,
right,
yeah,
right.
100. Yeah.
So I mean, he kind of gets it. All right, back to the TV show, the PBA World Championship. The first match, Troop over Sanders. Even though they tied at 248, he throws a strike. He throws a 7-split. So Troop gets to advance. Now it's Ryan Simonelli this time. Simonelli throws a 7-split there in the fourth frame. But then after 5, it's only a 2-pin difference. That's all it is. After 5 frames, you're going, okay, still wide open. And then Troop opens up in the 6th, the light first ball, left 7 count, and only got 2 of the 3 that were there. And that was pretty much the deal where you're going, well, that probably cost him.
Well, Troop made that comment to himself, too, like, can't go on TV without missing a spare. And, you know, missing 2 of them in the match, by the time he got to the 10th frame, totally changed, you know, everything with the match. But the bowlers got 15 minutes of practice for the TV show. You have one game that bowls before that, and you see these guys get totally lost. And how fast these guys can change the lanes nowadays with this equipment, whether they're using urethane like Troop was doing or whether they're using resin like Simonelli was doing and Sanders was. I mean, it's just amazing how quick these lanes change compared to what you and I and Sparky would see in league, where we can kind of sit there for half the night before we got to make that two-board move.
it was an ugly match because of how bad the lanes transitioned. I kept watching it going, well, this is exactly what my master instructor, Mo Pinnell, says, is you can't out-execute bad ball reaction. But was Randy right? Was it urethane that was just destroying the pattern?
Well, because urethane, these balls don't flare a lot. So you get a fresh surface on it. It's usually scuffed pretty well to try to get grabbed.
So you're going
to So it takes
heads.
Oil off the front part of the lane. And then because it doesn't flare as much.
Carries
down on the back part of the lane. And that's what makes these things really squirrely. So you see a move like what Kyle tried to do where you move everything left.
Right.
Problem is if you miss that shot a little bit to the right,
never
going to
come
back.
There's
no chance of it coming back. And we saw that a couple of times for Kyle.
Yeah. And that's exactly what you saw. You're right. Where he was light a couple of times throughout the night. So not a high-scoring matchup, but Simonelli takes it 193 to 180 over Troop. That then brings up the next match, the semifinal match of Jason Belmonte and Ryan Simonelli. We'll talk about that one coming up next. Castle Lane, Spare Time Bowling Show here on The Fan. You like Dave Matthews? Got a chance to win Dave Matthews tickets coming up this week on The Fan. Tune in to Chuck and Winkler to find out more about that tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. And, of course, we will talk more about the Green Bay Packers because that story just doesn't get any different, does it? So now you have a wide receivers coach they brought in from the Colts. Joe Philbin is coming back as offensive coordinator, it appears. And now... A story by Rob Domofsky says they may try and trade for John Schneider, the general manager of the Seattle Seahawks, who they were denied permission to interview. Now, that would also have to mean that John Schneider would want to come back here, which nobody has bothered to think of. Now, again, he's from there. He grew up in the Green Bay area and all of that, right? Packers are his first organization. Seattle is about to go through a rebuild because he hasn't drafted all that well the last couple of years. So we'll have to wait and see.
You guys are on it every day. I'm not. I'm looking.
Oh my god!
And from the outside, why are they not going after Elliot Wolf? Why is this Russ Ball guy coming up?
They interviewed Elliot Wolf. They interviewed John Gutekunst. And Gutekunst is interviewing today in Houston for the Texans general manager's job. So Russ Ball is a guy that was brought in, crazy enough, from Mike McCarthy. Well, recommended by Mike McCarthy, who was a guy who was in New Orleans with the Saints. And Russ Ball, I believe, was with the Kansas City Chiefs at 1.2. And McCarthy's known Russ Ball for a long, long time. And Russ Ball gets along swimmingly well with Ted Thompson.
Yeah.
And even more swimmingly well with Mark Murphy.
Mm.
So, again, now you get your chance to make your first big hire. And you want that guy that you can get along with, work with, and are on the same page with. And that would obviously be Russ Ball. Now, the whole talent evaluator aspect of it obviously gets brought into question. But if he's got a good scouting department around him, that doesn't necessarily have to be the biggest of deals at the end of the day. Bob McGinn's report originally was that Mike McCarthy was not on board with the Russ Ball hire.
Yeah.
Then Jason Willey came out and said 12 doesn't like the Russ Ball hire, wouldn't want that hire either. And now out comes a report saying yesterday that, well, that's not true. McCarthy will coach for either. And I said on Friday that don't get this mixed up. Mike McCarthy's not going to quit if they hire Russ Ball as general manager, but he has 2 years left on his deal. So I think what will occur is after next year, at that point with 1 year left on his deal, then they're going to have to make a decision on which way they're going to go. If they don't get along or if he doesn't like the direction they're going, then he can quit. Or Russ Ball can just remove him and tell him, go wherever else you want then. I'm going to get someone here that wants to be here, and you move forward. Now, if they hit the home run and they get John Schneider, well, that changes everything one more time because now you have a true Italian evaluator. And again, hasn't been all that great in the draft the last couple of years, but did build Seattle. So if you bring him in, he's totally different than Ted. He's super aggressive in free agency. He's super aggressive in trade. Character issues, he does not care about. Not nearly as much as Ted. So it's going to be a different type of roster for sure. Knowing the Green Bay Packers have had in the past, but this is the next guy's dream job. Always has been the Packers. Wow. So, and he's a younger guy. He's going to be here forever as long as there's success. And you're going to have somebody draft the successor to Aaron Rodgers at some point.
Yep.
He does have Russell Wilson in his back pocket. He failed on all of his other attempts at quarterback in Seattle, but he did get Russell Wilson, so that makes him attractive from that perspective, too. There's just a lot to go on
here. A lot of angles.
A lot of going on up in Green Bay, and we'll see how it all plays out. But it's definitely entertaining. They're not in the playoffs, but boy, oh boy, they're giving you more than they ever could.
Yep.
Okay, so back to bowling. It is a bowling show after all. See, it even takes over this
show. I know.
I mean, that just tells you the power of the Packers. PBA World Championship, match number 3, the semifinal. Now it's Simonelli and Belmonte. And I'll be honest with you, I was jacked for this one because I know the love loss that Brunswick has for Belmonte. Those guys all don't like him. And I get down with that. I understand that.
Phil's looking at me. I'm looking at him with the same look. Well, Simonelli's no longer with Brunswick. Simonelli's with Moda.
But he was with Rash.
Yes.
And I doubt doubt feelings change. Yeah. Listen, when those guys were all together, none of those guys got down with Belmonte. They were their own little clique.
I don't think anyone's
still
likes
one thing. Well, okay, maybe not. You're right. Maybe not. Maybe there's a more than that. Right.
And one thing that happened at the U.S. Open that, if you saw it on Extra Frame, you didn't see it when it got to TV, is that Belmonte, the last round of match play, threw backup balls.
That's what you were telling me, yeah.
To keep
I saw the story.
And there were a couple of guys that were
furious.
Yeah. I don't know if
one of them, Rhino Page, as you were saying.
One of them was Rhino Page, who ended up winning the tournament eventually. But I don't know if Simonelli is one of those. But, yeah, it was not well received by some of the players out there when Belmo was throwing back.
It just shows you what Belmo can
do with the ball, but he was scoring. That's the thing. He's doing what he can to stay in the tournament. He's scoring. He knew the right side burned out. Yeah, and he goes, okay, I'm not going to drill up anything new. I'm just going to take what I have in my hand and just throw backup balls and start averaging 220. No problem.
Think about that.
It's unthinkable.
Just if you're listening and you bowl, just think about what Phil just said. Yeah. So you bowl with this massive hook, and that's what he's got, ton of revs, the whole deal, right? And you're throwing the ball, and you're like, you know what? The hell with this. I'm going to throw a backup ball, coming back the other way, and be just as good damn near. That's what he did, right?
He made an early run. He fell off towards the end of the block. He got caught with transition because it's something they had never seen. You know, obviously adjusting transition on the left side, a little different than adjusting on the right. But he came out of the gates well pretty early. And, you know, one thing with the difference between what we saw with Belmo in 2016 and Belmo in 2017 is he wasn't making the mistakes where he was having some tournaments in 2016 where he'd throw a game that was just atrocious. And he'd train wreck for that game and then part of another game and fall behind. And we saw it out here on the TV show where he stayed patient.
Yeah,
the first four frames.
Yeah, because he really didn't have a good look, no.
And then he kind of bumped his feet to the right and kind of moved things to the left with his target down lane and straightened things out, and all of a sudden, next thing you know.
Looked like he threw it harder, too.
Right. Yeah,
I agree with
Randy
on that one.
Squaring up.
Yeah.
He had to with squaring up.
Because I thought Simonelli was just going to run away with the show, with the match.
Wait. I want to go back to this Belmonte thing here. This is amazing to me. I love this.
Yeah, but you remember when we had Del Ballard on, and Ballard said Belmonte can do anything?
Right, but this is where I'm going with this. If you're Belmonte's ball rep, coach, whatever you want to call him, and he says to you, you know what? I want to throw a backup. What the world do you do at that point?
Let him go.
Shake your head and like, whatever, dude. Do what you got to do. Because there's no way a ball rep would recommend to a bowler to throw a backup ball qualifying for a major tournament. There's not a chance. A, who's going to be able to pull that off that you would recommend that to? And B, what bowler would go along with a crazy idea to begin with?
It's the talent level. Norm Duke, at the same time that Belmo's throwing backup balls, here's Norm Duke playing the twig, playing outside for a second board. And then the next pair jumping in and playing sixth arrow. Mm-hmm. And the next pair moving back out and playing around second arrow.
See, regardless of what you see on TV, you have
no idea.
How special some of these guys are.
Yep.
Maybe not all of them, but a good portion of them are unbelievable.
Yep.
They just truly are. Okay.
Well, as much as the proprietors don't care, how many guys in a local area are going to be able to master throwing the ball 30 feet on a fly over a gutter capping down the lane?
Well, it's condition specific. They don't need to. When you're bowling a house shot here, you don't need to.
Who's going to even practice that, though?
A couple of guys, but mostly the college kids nowadays, because when they bowl six five-man team games in a tournament,
on
they
a
get
flat
fried
pattern.
On a flat pattern. They get fried out, and they got to move that far. But it's the kids. It's not you or I.
Yeah.
No, he'd kill you.
I'd be dislocating a shoulder.
Right. Absolutely right. Okay, so match 3. Simonelli and Belmonte, as we said. So I was excited for this one. I really was. And Belmonte wasn't striking early, like you said. It was spares, wasn't finding a shot necessarily, and you were just waiting to see what was going to happen. And I'll tell you, through about five, six frames in this match, I didn't think Belmonte was going to come back and win. Yeah. I was watching this. I'm going, I just don't think he has it today. I don't think he's going to catch Simonelli. Yeah. Simonelli looked like the better bowler for a majority of that match, Dwight.
Well, initially it was exactly what he was going through with Kyle Troop.
Right.
He was getting the same ball reaction that confused Troop. And then it's just a flip of a switch. Belmo figures it out. And that's what makes Kyle Troop good and makes Belmo great.
After Simonelli's first ball in the seventh, with Belmonte still to throw his ball in the seventh, it was plus 33 Simonelli in the seventh. After Simonelli's first ball in the seventh, it was plus 33. I'm going, it's over. Yeah. It's over. There's not a chance Simonelli's going to screw up that bad to let Belmonte back into this thing.
Well, I guarantee you the fat lady was starting to warm up, but she wasn't fully seating yet.
Well, she was eating. She was happy. She was eating. She was happy. So then after the first ball in the eighth by Belmonte, he closed it to 13.
Yep.
So now it's a 20-pin difference. And again, what happens? You get to the 10th, Belmonte strikes out, and you knew it was up to Simonelli, and you knew there was a problem. And Simonelli throws a ball through the nose, and that was it. Third ball in the 10th. He needed to strike out and throws a ball through the nose.
You watched that 6-10 he left. His follow-through was horrendous.
Yeah.
Because usually he's well right of his face for Simonelli with that follow-through, and he almost whacked himself in the nose.
Yep.
And he tried to save it. His elbow kind of turned early. He tried to save it on the bottom. And he got real lucky. It was 8.
Yeah.
It should have been 6.
Right. Yep. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So he pulls it through the nose, and there was like literally no reaction from Belmonte. Camera's on him. He's just looking at it like, all right, let's go.
You just can't give Belmonte that kind of opening.
Let's go throw this roll off. So it's not like either one of them struck either. Belmonte throws him 9 count.
Yep.
So, okay, Simonelli, throw a strike. It's over.
Yep.
Move on. No big deal.
Yep.
Choke. Like,
well,
and that was it. And then I love his reaction. His reaction. He turned around.
What?
It was like a shock. He's like, huh? Hey, he's asking Belmo, what happened? Why did you fuck him up? What happened?
When you look at an opponent and say what happened,
Belmonte didn't even acknowledge him. He's like, whatever, dude, get out of here. I gotta go get ready. I mean, I could not believe Simonelli's reaction. Like he saw a ghost. He
shock
could not believe
awe.
It didn't move.
No, he did.
It was so light.
He did talk in an interview with Kimberly Pressler that he tugged it 4/10 of a board right.
4/10 of an inch.
But I don't think that was it.
All that happened.
Wait, if you watch the replay of that last shot for Simonelli, Simonelli doesn't use a lot of loft on his shots. Doesn't use a lot. And that shot looked like he set it down before the oil pan starts. Because if you look at that blue oil, it doesn't start till about 16, 18 inches out on the lane. It doesn't start right at the foul line. It starts a little bit out there.
He thought he aced it.
If you set that ball down, what happens if a bowler sets a ball down short, Dwight, and it hits the approach?
It's going to check early.
It turns and burns. It burns a little energy.
Right.
These guys are bowling so hard and so fast with the revs. He gets that ball to change its axis a little bit early. It's not going to react like he thinks it's going to react.
Well, the thing that went through my mind right away, Phil, and you know this, obviously, is there's been probably many times in league or tournament that you thought you've made a good shot and ball didn't end up in the pocket. And I think that's just what happened.
A lot of times people set it short, though, when that happens. I mean, I've had teammates tell me, oh, you set that one short.
Short, yeah.
Because it's going to change how you hit a little bit of a burnout on the lane. Yep. It sparks, and you're, as a bowler, your eyes don't pick that up. Your eyes don't pick up the first 5, 6, 7 feet of the lane.
Right. There was just so much on that shot. That's the thing. I mean, he moves on if he strikes there, and he thought he aced it, as he kept saying. You know, so it was a total shock moment for him. But in my career, I remember throwing a lot of good shots, and it didn't end up in the pocket.
There's one other thing that happened that I didn't write down, and I should have wrote down. I was just looking to see if there were Simonelli quotes in the PBA story, which there aren't. The Belmonte finger grip coming out.
Yeah.
And that match, too.
Yep.
That was the final.
Was it the final match that came out?
Yep.
Yeah. So that's not very common, is it? I mean, I had it happen on one of my balls, but that ball's like 20 years old, so that's expected. But not on a TV show. Aren't those all brand new balls?
Well, they're using crazy glue on top of it to hold it in. It could be a loose pilot hole. You might have had tape wrapped around it. It looked like there was tape around the grip, and maybe it just wasn't glued very good.
Didn't really matter. But
you got to remember, they're also putting 650, 700 revs on the ball. So,
right.
I mean, they're getting a lot of torque off their fingers.
Yep. Yeah, no question.
No, I've never seen it on TV. No.
I've never seen it on TV. No. All right, so the championship match is coming up. What ends up happening is Belmonte wins on a roll-off. That's the second roll-off of this TV show. And like all three of us said, we've never seen two ties in one TV show. Nonetheless, two roll-offs in one TV show. All right, coming up next, it's Svensson and Belmonte. Svensson showing a little bit of emotion again in this one. Not a ton, but a little bit before the match started. And Belmonte, oh, buddy. When this one was over, he was fired up.
Well, this is the match that I think every bowling fan wanted.
Wanted to see at the end, right. Yep. Sean who? Back after this on the Castle Lights Maritime Bowling Show. Castle Lane Spare Time Bowling Show. Steve Sparky, Fiverr. Phil Brilo, Extra Frame, PBA.com. Get your subscription today. Dwight Albrick, Spare Time Pro Shop in New Berlin. Anything new going on over there? What's the hot ball that's flying off the shelves?
Well, we have our February release coming.
Oh.
And we are going to have Sean Morris on from Ebonite soon to, obviously, we're going to have a ball raffle. And all the manufacturers, Sparky, are coming out now with their tournament balls, third release of the season. So it always goes August, November to February,
right.
February to April, and April we're done. But now I heard, oh boy, from at least the manufacturers, we carry about 15, 16 new balls just for the last 3 months of the year for tournament season.
Oh, wow. That's great. Yep. You got a lot going on over there.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so we get to the finals, the TV finals now here for the PBA World Championship TV show that was for the PBA last week. And it's Svensson and Belmonte, and I think we all agree this is the match that everybody wanted to see. Before this thing started, you wanted to see the young gun. God, Belmonte, I got to say Belmonte's old, I guess. I mean, in comparison to Svensson.
Yeah,
in comparison to Svensson, I guess he's the old dog in this whole thing. Svensson didn't exactly start off the way he wanted to in the first frame. Seven split, gets a couple, and it's nine. But then he strikes going forward from there from the second to the seventh. He gets on a roll. Belmonte throws the first three, leaves a 10-pin in the fourth, and then in the sixth frame comes back, throws the ball light, eight spare, and that same lane comes back in the eighth frame, light again, eight spare. That was giving him issue.
Well, Belmo even talked about it where he's like he wasn't getting out of the shot well. He was getting the elbow a little early. He said, get up the back of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you start to get a little side rotation for it, it's going to skid long, especially with that urethane. And you could see the difference between the two shots he had in the sixth and the eighth and how he posted and held that follow-through on the shots later on in the match. That eighth-frame shot got him to realize.
And that's the thing we were talking about last week, Sparky, when you were talking about Belmo and some of the changes that he's made physically in his game over the years.
Absolutely. Ninth frame, Svensson, light. In the ninth, he ends up with a nine spare there. You look at this, and they're going – back and forth it goes. Belmonte gets a strike in the ninth frame to take advantage of that. Now it comes back to Svensson in the 10th. He really needed to string all three, to be honest with you, to really close out Belmonte, not have to worry about it. He throws a shot and leaves a 7-pin. I don't think it was a bad shot.
Just the overcorrection off the 6-pin. He had back-to-back 6-pins.
Right.
Yeah. 7-8, and it's just the different correction. Wrong guess.
Yeah, I think Randy was 100% spot on again. I think, again, when you make that adjustment with urethane, you move a half board or a quarter board left or right, just like Phil says, you get it a little out to that spot, it ain't going to come back.
Right.
With urethane, maybe it could with resin.
Well, I agree with you on that. And that's the other thing about this whole deal is when you talk about corrections and ball reps and coaches, it really can be just this little minute thing that if you would have done just this thing different or opposite of what you did, you carry that 7-pin.
I think casual fans sometimes don't get to see how good these guys actually are because if they especially
don't.
League bowlers, because you get used to a league condition, and some guys think, oh, I can do that. And you know, I'm glad this year for the Chris Paul Invitational, it's going to be on Blue Oil because these people are going to see what a house shot looks like, because the Chris Paul shot's always on a house pattern.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually named the Chris Paul pattern now. There's actually a tournament on the PBA Tour this year. Eventually, it's going to use it as well. I can't say anything about it yet, but can you imagine these pros on a house shot and what they're going to score?
Yeah.
And that's the thing.
A lot of urethane again.
Yeah, and with as tough as these patterns are, I think the casual fan doesn't realize how good Belmont actually
can be. Well, it's interesting
because,
you know, we were talking about that urethane deal earlier. Belmonte's quoted in the PBA story, the traffic of urethane balls Jesper and Kyle were using laid down an oil track that made reading the progression difficult. You can usually see early telltale signs, but not this time. It got to the point I didn't know what to do.
Yeah, they were confused.
I mean, that is crazy.
Well, the show that Liz Johnson won was on Chameleon, and that shot held up all three games.
Look at the different rev rates.
Different rev rates, and they were throwing reactive.
Right.
Right. All right, so you get a 7-pin, a spare, and a strike for Svensson in the 10th. And you could tell by this dude's body language, he knew he was over. He knew he was probably done.
Yeah.
He was sitting there. He was kind of slouched with just a frustrated look on his face like, there's no way he's going to screw this up. Belmonte throws the first one. He needs the second one, and it's over, and he buried it. And it was over. And Belmonte goes on to win that one against Svensson, 238 to 225. And Belmonte said this, in the last frame, needing two strikes to win after not striking on that lane the previous three attempts, I made two of the best shots I've ever thrown in my life.
Yeah.
It was a good guess and even better execution. After Jesper left that 7-pin, I knew all I had to do was throw one more great shot, Belmonte said. I never think I've won until I look up and see mathematically I've won.
Yeah, he posted that shot so beautifully and held his finish just gorgeous. Under that kind of pressure, and that's what makes him so great. Is
so good.
Under that pressure. Phil, I had a question for you, though. You're out there so much. Why does Svensson use KT tape on his opposite bowling hand? 2 weeks in a row, I've noticed that. And he even winced at his right hand during that match. Is that from the two-handed release and cupping and uncupping, even though he does it all, the throwing with the left hand?
Well, if you notice with the tape where it rests on the ball.
Yeah.
It helps the ball not slip.
Okay.
So
he doesn't have it on for injury because he has his whole hand and wrist covered. I'm just was wondering, obviously, when he winced, it looked like he was in pain with his right hand.
Yeah. No, it's just to help him, you know, when he's holding on the ball, he's got the ball in front, his wrist right there rests on top of the bowling ball.
Okay.
So that way it doesn't slide around. Because I know he's tried to use stuff on his left arm as well to keep the ball from slipping. And
so it's just mainly grip purposes, not that he's fighting an injury or
correct.
Something. Okay.
Yeah.
Some more stuff from this PBA, so we really got a couple minutes left here. Yeah. Belmonte said that's going to go down as one of the most exciting shows in a long time. Belmonte, who added the PBA World Championship to his collection of major titles that includes two PBA Tournament of Champions, two PBA Players Championships, unprecedented 4 United States Bowling Congress members titles. At age 34, he's a U.S. Open title away from the PBA Triple Crown and the Super Slam, the Grand Slam plus the Players Championship.
You know who else in their career never won the U.S. Open? Greatest of all time, Earl Anthony.
Really?
Never won a U.S. Open.
Only player to win 3 majors in 1 year.
Yep.
He'll win the U.S. Open. Not even going to think. He's going to win it before it's over.
And right now with players, I did these stats last night, players with more than 125 PBA Tour events in their career, Belmo is the highest winning percentage. He's winning 11.6% of his events.
Yeah, and runaway for player of the year. He has to get it from the voters.
That is just crazy. Absolutely crazy. All right, that will do it. PBA back on TV again today.
Yeah, round 2.
As well, noon kickoff for this, for the World Bowling Tour Women's and Men's Finals coming up at noon today. Check that one out. Thanks so much for listening. It has been the Castle Lane Spare Time Bowling Show, quickest hour on radio. Bye-bye.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.